Hostess is again looking for the cream-filled center that'll put it on sweeter financial ground.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Hostess Brands today filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection, citing more than $1 billion in debt. But the company that makes Wonder Bread, Twinkies, and Susie Q's just emerged from bankruptcy back in September, only 3 or 4 months ago. And as Marketplace's Adrian Hill tells us, there's a term for bankruptcy the second time around.
Who says that bankruptcy experts don't have a sense of humor? You've heard about Chapter 11. How about Chapter 22?
It's a made-up term. It doesn't have any real meaning in the law or anywhere else. And it's somewhat of a joke based on firms going into Chapter 11 two times. So 2 times 11 is 22.
Edie Hotchkiss is a finance professor at Boston College's Carroll School of Management. There are a few Chapter 33s.
I think there may even be a Chapter 44 out there.
Companies bounce in and out of Chapter 11 for a couple of reasons. Sometimes it's an industry issue, downturns causing trouble. Hotchkiss says airlines are a good example of that. Other times, that first Chapter 11 filing creates a tough path forward.
The companies that emerge from the first Chapter 11 emerge weak.
Stephen Walt is a law professor at UVA. He says companies often leave bankruptcy with a whole lot of debt, making it that much easier to get in trouble a second or third or even fourth time. I'm Adrian Hill for Marketplace.
Let's do the numbers. Yeah, markets are mixed right now. The S&P and Dow each down. The Dow's down about a third of a percent, 40 points at 12,421. The NASDAQ, however, is up about 0.2% at the moment. European stocks finished today in the red. Meanwhile, officials in Europe are reportedly on the verge of blocking the multi-billion dollar New York Stock Exchange German exchange deal because of antitrust concerns. And luxury jeweler Tiffany & Company says sales were sluggish during the holidays and its growth has slowed. Think you can predict which city will be hit by a big economic crisis? You might want to look up. A new report by Barclays Capital shows a correlation between building the world's tallest building and a local economy that'll soon go in the tank. Andrew Lawrence is the head of Asia Real Estate, Retail Real Estate Research at Barclays Capital, and he wrote the report. He's with us now from Hong Kong. Hey, Andrew.
Hi, Steve.
I want to know, you know, I thought skyscrapers indicated economic strength. What's going on here?
Well, what we're seeing here is that skyscrapers really tend to indicate the expansion of economies and probably the misallocation of capital. So if we go back in time, we find that when we see the world's tallest building being built, it tends to correspond with an economic downturn.
Well, give us some examples.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, we can go back as far as the late 1800s, but perhaps the more familiar buildings to your listeners would be, you know, New York in the 1930s.
Oh, when the Empire State Building was being built, right?
Yeah, that's correct, yep. And then 1970s with Chicago Sears Building. And more recently, 1997, Petronas Towers in Kuala Lumpur in Malaysia, which coincided with the Asian financial downturn. And then in the last 3 or 4 years, we've had Dubai being built, which coincided effectively with the current economic downturn.
What does this say about commercial real estate then?
Well, I think what it shows is that the commercial real estate shows some relatively sporadic building. So there's no clear cycle. There can be sometimes quite long periods between the building. But they do correspond with economic expansion and probably the misallocation of capital, particularly easy, cheap credit.
You know, buildings, I mean, I think of big buildings as sort of engineering marvels, if you will. Doesn't that sort of dissuade us now from wanting to reach for the sky?
Engineering miracles, yes, indeed, and probably architecture to capitalism. I suspect that generally people are not going to stop reaching for the sky. In some ways, it's just a expression of economic achievement, and people will continue to want to build higher and higher, I suspect.
Andrew Lawrence, who authored this report for Barclays Capital. Andrew, thank you so much.
That's a pleasure. Good to talk to you.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Progressive Insurance with Snapshot, a personalized program that bases rates on mileage and safe driving habits. Learn more at progressive.com. and by GoToMeeting by Citrix, bringing high-definition video conferencing to online meetings for face-to-face collaboration. More at GoToMeeting.com.
The People's Choice Awards are tonight. Not quite the Oscars, but there's usually a little buzz that goes on around it. A lot of folks in Hollywood, though, think the People's Choice ceremony is all about TV ratings and not much else. So who are the people voting on the awards? Sally Herships reports.
To understand exactly how unimportant Hollywood thinks the People's Choice Awards is, all you have to do is talk to Steve Pond. He's awards columnist for the Hollywood website, The Wrap.
I'm absolutely immersed in awards season right now, and I had no idea it was even going on.
But so far, 230 million votes have been cast in the People's Choice Awards. So who are these people?
The people ostensibly are us, we, the people.
Max Dawson teaches film at Northwestern.
Same sort of amorphous, unidentifiable public from which the Nielsen audience is drawn, or the 3 out of 5 people who prefer Pepsi over Coke.
Dawson says these voters are not film buffs. They're fans. The kind of person who has an entire room at home dedicated to Tom Cruise. In the People's Choice, fans can vote as many times as they want. All they have to do is go to the website and click away.
And that's why the People's Choice Awards are generally dismissed and derided by the critical community.
But big Hollywood studios like the awards. Dawson says that's because the people choose blockbusters. Red carpet photo op, anyone? I'm Sally Herships for Marketplace.
Finally this morning, amid all the gadgetry at the Consumer Electronics Show going on in Las Vegas this week, you may have missed this. A compartment in a refrigerator that'll turn any room temperature can of beer ice cold in 5 minutes. That's right, 5 minutes. A couple of cans in 8 minutes. No more sticking the beer or whatever beverage you're drinking in the freezer and hoping you don't forget about it. LG says the new contraption will go on the market later this year and hopefully will help warm up appliance sales for the company. I'm Steve Chiotakis in Los Angeles. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. This is APM, American Public Media.
It's expensive to run a political campaign. There's staff and ads don't come cheap, but be that as it may, money is still no guarantee.
I tell candidates, it's always better to be the candidate with the most money, but you can win without it.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, Money and Politics a la Freakonomics. The numbers from Wall Street as well. That's next time on Marketplace. It's from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.